Morning, we are in Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. And so if you would turn there with me, we're going to be in verses 1 through 8 today. We're still in the Sermon on the Mount. We have just turned the corner. Chapter 5 was very, very interesting. We had a ton to see in there. And now we are turning the corner into chapter 6. So I'll give you another few moments to get there in chapter 6, and then I'm going to read for you verses 1 through 8. Matthew chapter 6, verse 1 through 8. Beware of practicing your righteousness before men to be noticed by them. Otherwise, you have no reward with your Father who is in heaven. So when you give to the poor, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, so that they may be honored by men. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward in full. But when you give to the poor, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving will be in secret, and your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. When you pray, you are not to be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and on the street corners, so that they may be seen by men. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward in full. But you, when you pray, go into your inner room, close your door, and pray to your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. And when you are praying, do not use meaningless repetition as the Gentiles do, for they suppose that they will be heard for their many words. So do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask him. Amen. This is our passage today. We may not realize it, but the deadliest attacks are the silent ones. When an attack is preceded with clamor and noise on its approach, warning bells go off, alarms, sirens. The attack you hear coming is the one you can defend against. The attack you don't hear is the most dangerous. A ninja assassin in the night, the snake in the grass, the disease with no symptom, the carbon monoxide gas. These are the silent killers that plague us. An attack that brings no warning stirs no defense. Jesus was aware of this. In today's passage, he is going to sound the alarm. We are in danger and we are unaware. A silent killer lurks in our midst, even in our churches. So be forewarned and heed Jesus' caution today. We finished Matthew 5 and now we're moving on to Matthew 6 here. The two are tied together. These two sections, Matthew 5, verse 21 through 47 and 6, 1 through 21, are two sides of the same coin of who the law defines as a righteous person. The righteous avoid evil in chapter 5, and in chapter 6, they do good. But it goes beyond that. It goes beyond just avoiding bad and doing good. It is that the righteous have the proper heart. The righteous spiritually are in the right place. The last verse we covered before we did the 2 weeks off, we covered verse 48, and that's the hinge between the two verses. And that one said, be perfect as your Father is perfect. And so avoid the negative, chapter 5. Be perfect as your Father is perfect. Do good, chapter 6. And that is where we are today. Now, before we get into the text, there are several prohibitions that Jesus makes in these 8 verses. However, we got to be careful with them, okay? Because if you don't be careful, you may think he's prohibiting certain actions. So despite initial appearances, Jesus does not prohibit the following. He's not prohibiting doing righteous deeds. He's not prohibiting letting anyone see you do a good deed. He's not prohibiting praying in public, and he's not prohibiting praying repetitious or formulaic or even lengthy prayers. He's not prohibiting those. How do we know that he's not? Well, because he allows those and, in fact, commands us to do those in different places. For instance, righteous deeds, he wants us to do that. He's teaching us how to do that in the Sermon on the Mount. So we know that. How do we know that he's not prohibiting letting anyone see you do a good deed? Well, in the last chapter, chapter 5, verse 16, he says, let others see your good deeds. And then praying in public. Well, Jesus prayed in public all the time. And coming up right next to this is the Lord's Prayer that we pray all the time. How do we know that we're allowed to pray formulaic prayers? The Lord's Prayer is a formulaic prayer. So, if it's not those things that Jesus is saying, avoid these things, don't do these things, what is the point and what is he driving at? What is he getting to? What is his point? Although these by themselves are not an issue, there is a silent killer among them that can sneak in and can cause havoc. And that silent killer is the motivation of the heart. The motivation of the heart can be a silent killer. The external can be pure, but your spiritual can still be diseased. So, for today, I want you to have in the back of your mind, we had that sermon a while back talking about the spiritual realm and the dimensions and all of that, right? And we talked about how the spiritual realm, we don't see it, we don't understand it, we don't have a full comprehension of it, but that doesn't mean that it's not real. And in fact, perhaps the spiritual reality is more real than even the physical reality that we sense and can operate within. And so I want you to have that in the back of your mind, that the spiritual reality exists, it's real, and it is important, and it plays a major, major part. So, here's the main takeaway that I want you to have at the forefront of your brain as we're going through the rest of this message. The spiritual realm seems silent. That's the way it seems. It seems silent. Unless you cultivate your spirit, you learn to understand it, and you properly connect it to God, your spirit can be broken and no alarms will sound. You're not even going to hear an alarm. You're not going to sense anything's wrong. You don't get any alerts unless you cultivate your spirit and understand what your spirit is doing. When you are spiritually in danger, you will not even be aware of it. The thief, the devil, can sneak in unannounced, and you're going to remain in slumber unless you understand your spiritual state. So keep that in mind as we now turn to the text, and we're going to get familiar with this passage. The text is pretty straightforward. It's pretty simple to understand, but it's worthwhile to take a close look here at what one of these terms that is used here, and it comes up for the first time of many times in Matthew, and that term is hypocrite. So a lot of us have an understanding of what a hypocrite is, and what we typically think of with hypocrite is this idea of someone that judges or is critical of someone else, but they're not critical the same way with themselves. Or someone that preaches, hey, you need to do this, but then they don't follow through with their own actions. That's typically what we think of as someone who's a hypocrite, who's hypocritical. And we're going to see that personified in chapter 7 here. And so that's a good definition. That's definitely a part of what we're talking about. But there's another definition that plays a part here and is very important for us to understand. In the original Greek, the word originally referred to actors, someone that put on a mask. So think of Greek plays, right? You got the tragic mask and you got the comedic mask. An actor was called a hypocrite, someone that was playing a part. They were pretending to be something, but in reality, they were something else. So why did I bring up these fun masks and things, costumes for our kids? So that we can start to think about being an actor. Are we being a hypocrite? I made myself a hypocrite by putting on the rabbit ears, and the other kids are being hypocrites. They're being actors by putting them on themselves. And so that concept of hypocrisy is going to give us a real good picture of what Jesus is saying in this passage. So keep that in mind as well. When he uses the term hypocrite, he indicates that those who do their righteous deeds to please men are acting as if they're righteous, when in fact, they are not. That is what he is meaning. So let's go back to our text and we'll work our way through it. Verse 1 says this, "Beware of practicing your righteousness before men to be noticed by them." What does that start out with? Beware. What that word means is to be in a state of alarm. When you're in a state of alarm, there's danger. There's something lurking that's a problem. There's something that you need to be aware of. Pay attention. Something is wrong. Something is amiss. Now, it's really strange to put beware and then what comes next. Beware of practicing your righteousness. What? Why would you need to be aware? Why would you need to be on alert practicing good deeds? That's what the Bible's all about, right? Like, go do good stuff. So why would you have to be aware, be on alert when you're practicing righteousness? Well, he says something more specific. When you practice your righteousness before men, before people, when other people see, and specifically, to be noticed by them. Catch that? There's a major motivator there that's very different. It changes the deed. If your purpose in doing a good deed is to be noticed by other people, for them to see it, for them to think that you're great, for you to gain their approval. Oh, look at Nigel. He does this. He did that. Wow, he gave to the poor. He said this awesome prayer. I love Pastor Nigel. If I'm doing anything that I'm doing, and I'm doing it to get your approval, I need to be aware. I need to be alert because there is a silent killer waiting for me. And that's what Jesus is saying to all of us. Pay attention. Why? Why do we need to pay attention? The very next thing it says is, otherwise, you have no reward with your Father who is in heaven. Yikes. That's a big deal. No reward from the Father? I'm doing my righteous deeds. I'm doing what God told me to do. Why do I need to be aware? Because your rewards with God are at stake. Note here that the appropriate response to the potential of not receiving rewards from God is alarm. Beware, God's reward is no trivial thing, folks. It's not a little thing. It's not like an add-on. It's not like a bonus. It's life itself. The rewards that God has for us, we want to receive. You need to receive. And if you're on the verge of not receiving them, you need to beware. Next week, we're going to talk about those rewards and why that's such a big deal. So hang in there. We're going to hit on that. But this, by the way, is this verse. This is going to be the thesis for the next 21 verses here. Here's his main thesis. This is what he's basically saying. Where do you want your reward? Because you get an option. You get to choose. You get to choose where your reward comes from. Do you want it now or do you want it later? Do you want it from people? Or do you want it from God? Do you want it here on earth? Do you want it in heaven? That's your choice. Now, this isn't saying that you err if anyone approves of what you do. That's not what it's saying. It's a matter of comparison and ultimate motivation. What is the motivator? Only one can be preeminent. Only one can be dominant. Are you seeking the approval of men or the approval of God? Don't seek the approval of men. Seek the approval of God. All right, so verse 2 then says this. So when you give to the poor, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets so that they may be honored by men. There's not actually evidence that we find that people actually did this, like, hey, I'm about to give to the poor. Let me get a trumpet out. But it gives you a really funny image, doesn't it? This, someone gets out a trumpet, do-do-do-do, hear ye, all you great folks, I am about to give out my money to the poor. Come and give me honor and praise, right? This is the picture that he's projecting here. It's really, really funny. Quit tooting your own horn, man. Where do you think that phrase came from? Right here. It came from right here. Don't toot your own horn. Don't be letting everybody know this is what you're doing. This is the first instance that we see the word hypocrite. It comes up right here. Their act is righteous, right? I'm acting as if I'm righteous. That's the mask. The mask is I'm a righteous person who gives to the poor. The true identity is they just want your affection. They just want people's attention and approval. What is the result for the actor, the hypocrite, the pretender? Says this, truly I say to you, they have their reward in full. They have their reward in full. In the Greek, this term was a commercial term, meaning to receive a sum in full and give a receipt for it. In other words, hey, we gave you our money. Here's our proof that we don't owe you anything more. We're done. Transaction's over. So what this means is if you're acting this way, if you're a hypocrite, if you go and you want to seek approval from men and you do a righteous deed and people pay attention to you, that's it. That's all the reward you get. God has zero for you after that. Big nothing. No more. You've been paid your reward. That's it. Verse 3, but when you give to the poor, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing so that your giving will be in secret. This obviously is an exaggerated figure of speech, right? Your left hand doesn't know anything. Your right hand doesn't know anything. So what you're doing is just, here's what it's saying. It's so completely not meant for the affection of other people, the approval of other people, that it's as if your hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing. That's what it's saying. And then it says this, and your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. God sees in secret, folks. Nothing is hidden from him. He also rewards those deeds that are done in secret for him. Jesus then moves from giving to the poor, and he starts talking about prayer. Verse 5, when you pray, you are not to be like the hypocrites. There's that word again. For they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and on the street corners so that they may be seen by men. Imagine what this is. Praying for people so that people see you. That's opposite. Prayer is you talking to God. If you are pretending to talk to God, to talk to people, that's an abomination. That's insulting. It's like if I was having a conversation with my wife, but I was really intending to show off for somebody else. That's bad news, right? She's not happy with me. If she picks up that I'm doing that, I'm in the doghouse. I'm in trouble. If we're doing that to God, that is a problem. He says again, truly I say to you, they have their reward in full. People are going to see the deed. They're going to think well of this person. And that's the complete reward. It ends there. No more reward from God. Verse 6, but you, when you pray, go into your inner room, close your door and pray to your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. This is the same idea as we talked about before. Verse 7, and when you are praying, do not use meaningless repetition as the Gentiles do, for they suppose that they will be heard for their many words. So do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask. You don't need to use repetition or many words in order for God to hear you, folks. You don't need to conjure that up. You don't need to convince him to listen to you. Notice what I said there, right? In order for God to hear you. God hears you already, so you don't need to grab his attention. Can you use repetitious prayers? Can you say long prayers? Absolutely. But you don't need those tactics to get God to hear you. Why? Because your Father knows what you need before you ask. That's what he just said. He already knows. He knows what you need. So it's not so that you grab his attention. God, if only you knew what I need. He knows what you need. Before I summarize the verses, right, and talk about the whole thing, let me just camp right here for a second. God calls himself Father for a reason. He loves you. He's intimate with you. He cares about you. You are his precious child. He knows you intimately. He made you, for goodness sake. You don't have to barter with God. You don't have to twist his arm to listen to you. You can't bribe him to care. He already cares. What are you trying to bribe him to do? He already does that. When you pray to God, his attention is already fixated on you. You don't have to try to get it, folks. Kendi, she'll ask for my attention when I'm doing a chore oftentimes. And I try my best to pay attention to her. But there are times when I just can't. I've got something else going on. I just can't fully give her my attention. Why? Is it because I don't want to? Is it because I don't love her? No, it's because I have limits, right? I only have so much focus. I can only do so many things at a time. And sometimes I need to get stuff done. Here's the truth about God. He has no limits. He has no limits. Nothing about God is limiting him from paying any attention to you. So when you come to him, he's all yours. All you got to do is come to him. You don't have to barter. You don't have to bribe him. You don't have to say, oh, God will do this if you pay attention. He's already listening. He already cares. So let's bring all this together. What did this all talk about? What is this passage saying? We are to beware, be on alert of what? Practicing our righteous deeds specifically in order to be seen by men. If you seek attention when you give to the poor or you pray, people are going to notice. They're going to think well of you, but God is not pleased and he will not reward you. Rather, seek to do your deeds in secret, meaning not in order to please people, but to please God. That's what we're supposed to do. On the spiritual realm, we please God. That is our aim. That is what is to drive our good deeds. So, now that we're familiar with the passage, there are several different topics here that deserve our full attention. I could do a full sermon on each of these that come up. So listen to all these that you're not going to hear about today. These are all these different sermons that you could have a full sermon on. Hypocrisy, motivation, rewards in heaven, giving, prayer, proper prayer techniques, God's knowing all secrets. All of those are here within that passage. And I don't have time to go over them all. But I encourage you to go study some of those on your own. Here they are again. Hypocrisy, motivation, rewards in heaven, giving, prayer, proper prayer techniques, God's knowing all secrets. Unfortunately, I don't have time to go through them all. So let me just hone in on the main concept. And we're gonna center ourselves there. Here's the main concept. Don't be a hypocrite. Please God rather than seeking the approval of men. That's what we're to do. Don't be a hypocrite. Please God rather than seeking to impress men. I began talking about silent killers, right? When they're quiet, you don't get that alarm. There are loud killers. There are things that are loud that we know are problems. Murder, adultery, divorce, broken vows, right? The things that he talked about in chapter 5. Those things are loud. Those things raise the alarm. If someone gets murdered, everyone's paying attention to that. If there's adultery in a marriage, everybody's paying attention to that. Everybody sees that, right? Those are loud killers. Those are problematic. Those raise the alarm. We all see that. But the killers that ravish the religious are the silent ones. It's the ones that are quiet. And chief among the silent killers for the religious are hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is your main silent killer within the religious community. Man, religious people are great at putting on the mask and acting and pretending, are we not? You know it's true. You know it's true. Religious people put on the mask all the time. It's so easy to do. There's tremendous benefits from being in a religious community, right? There's social benefits. You get friends. You get even business transactions that can happen because you are in a religious community. There's all sorts of stuff you get from it. And many can look the part on the outside, even though they're not on the inside. Being a hypocrite, pretending to be something in the church, is nefarious when it's done intentionally. When you're intentionally acting, that's nefarious. And it's tragic when it's done unintentionally. When somebody is acting and they don't even realize that they're acting. Jesus is going to warn against wolves in sheep's clothing, right? There are people that are coming in, they're acting like they're with us, but they're not. They're troubled, they're wolves in sheep's clothing. But here's the danger. Most hypocrites don't even know that they're a hypocrite. They're not even aware of it. Jesus is talking in the Sermon on the Mount to a crowd of hypocrites that don't even know that they're not with him. Inner motivations, what is really driving us, what is in our spirit, what is really there for us, what is driving our behavior, are often unknown by the owner. We are often mistaken about what are our true motivations. This happens to me commonly, right? So I'll be in my office counseling somebody, and we're digging into, hey, you got this problem, what's going on? We're digging. Guess where we end up usually getting? More often than not, we get to a motivation, something that is driving the behavior that's causing them problems, and that motivation they didn't even realize they had. It happens often, right? People will have a motivation they don't even recognize. Links to trauma or pain or mistakes in the past may cause behavior decades later without that person's awareness. They don't even know that it's there. Here's an example. I was listening to an interview by Stephen Colbert and Anderson Cooper. And Colbert was talking, he's a comedian, he does the late night stuff. He was talking about when his dad died when he was like 10 years old, his mom had a really hard time. And so he didn't realize till he was like in his 40s, 50s, that he had actually really gone into comedy because it helped him help his mom deal with the pain of his dad's death. And so that he would try to make his mom laugh and that would help her deal with the pain, and that was helpful, and he didn't realize he was doing that. He didn't realize that that was the main motivation for him to get into comedy, and he's been doing it for decades. He was unaware of that, and recently when his mom passed away, he realized, oh, that's why I was doing that. That's why I was doing comedy. I've had this happen to myself. So in junior high, I started to get into some crowds that were leading me in a wrong direction. I was starting to get into some sin that I didn't want to get into. And so high school hit, and I said, that's it. I'm done. No more. I am not going to be manipulated by them. I'm not going to be impacted by them. I'm not going to be tempted by them anymore. That's it. I'm done. No more. I'm not going to be driven away from God by my friends. And so I said, all right, I'm not going to be influenced by them like that anymore. It took me 8 years, folks, to figure out what the true motivation was. I had a bit of that motivation. That was there. I didn't want to be influenced by it. But it took me 8 years to figure out that the real motivation behind it was I had gotten hurt and I didn't want to get hurt again. And I got hurt by being close to people. And guess what I started to do? I started to distance myself, not just from those that were bad influences, but I also kept good influences out of my life. I had walls up against good influences. And it took all this stuff happening and all these things that were going wrong in my life for me to stop and recognize, hey, what is this coming from? And I had to unravel it. And when I unraveled it, it came back to I got hurt by another person, and so I wanted to withdraw. It's really easy, folks, for us to be motivated by stuff that we don't even see. Silent killers. Without understanding your underlying motivations, you may be a hypocrite, acting religious as if you were connecting with God when in fact you are seeking the approval of men. That's a silent killer. Jesus is going to blow the doors right off of this one, shouting, beware, pay attention. Many of you don't love God. You just want people's affection. There's a killer among you. That's what Jesus is yelling to these people. The alarm needs to be raised. These people, these hypocrites, they are in danger of hell and they don't even know it. The hypocrite, the actor, if they are unaware, looks at their righteous deeds. They see the approval that other people in the community give them and they assume God is pleased. And they assume their relationship with God is secure. And they assume God is awaiting them with rewards when they die. We're going to see this tragedy vividly played out in the next chapter. So wait for that. But unless they have made the spiritual move of faith, no matter how far they fly across that canyon, they're still plummeting like the rest. Without faith, there is no love. Without love, there is no connection to God. Hypocrisy is so dangerous because it works. It works, right? So, if I get this on here. Hey guys, I'm a bumblebee. Buzz, buzz, buzz. I'm a bumblebee. I go to the hive, I get my honey, that's who I am. Right? Right? I'm just a bumblebee. Why are you looking at me that way? Why are you looking at me like I'm an idiot? I'm a bumblebee. I'm not a person. I'm not the pastor anymore. What's the problem? It's an act, right? It's pretend. I'm not a bumblebee. How do you know? I have the antenna. How do you know I'm not a bumblebee? Because you can see me. You see who I really am. I'm still me. Here's the point. God sees you for exactly what you... I'm going to take this off because you guys aren't taking me serious right now. All right? Here, pay attention to this. You can have the mask on, but God still sees you just as you were seeing me. You get it? You can have the mask on. You can be pretending. You can fool everybody else around you, but God sees exactly who you are. It's not a game to him. He sees the spiritual reality. He sees you for what you are. So it's dangerous because it works. People will look and they'll say, oh yeah, that guy is a bumblebee, because that's all they see, right? I can't see your soul. I can't see what's happening on the inside. I have a hard time even understanding what's happening on the inside of me, right? And so all these people are like, yeah, that guy, he is religious. That girl, she's religious. She loves God, because they're putting on an act. But God looks at it and goes, no, they got the stupid bumblebee thing happening. That's all that it is. It's a silent killer. So what is Jesus's plea? Beware. Wake up. Just because you don't hear the sirens doesn't mean you're innocent. Just because you don't sense the sirens going off in your head doesn't mean that you are safe. Instead of playing the part, evaluate. Look at yourself. Search your heart. Why do you do what you do? Are you loving God when you act? Do you go to church for God, or do you go to church for other people? Do you serve your community? Do you give to the poor? Do you pray? What is the real motivation behind that? Is it really God, or is it really you want to impress other people or impress yourself? What is it? Are you putting on an act, or are you not? I hope you're not. You know, I hope it's honest. I hope it's genuine. I hope it's real. I hope that you do love the Lord, and that's where it's coming from. You're not putting on an act. It's an extension of who you are. But if you're not, if you are playing a game, get back on course. And so let me give you a specific warning as well, all right? Don't do anything to please me. I want you to hear that. Don't you ever, please do not ever do anything just because you think it's going to please me, your pastor. There's a danger there with leadership. I don't want you to fall into that trap. Please don't do it for me. My job is to point you to God, not take his place. I want you to hear that. My job is for you to point you to God, not take his place. So if what I say aligns with God, do it, but for God's pleasure, not because you think you're going to gain my approval or for anyone else's approval for that matter. It's not worth seeking my approval, folks. It's not. It is worth everything seeking God's approval. That's what matters. So if you find yourself doing something and your main motivation is for me or for someone else, you're putting on a mask. Take the mask off. Instead, what are you supposed to do? Do your acts in secret, intentionally for God, not just because it's right, but because you love God. What I mean by do your acts in secret is you don't have to, oh no, someone saw me do a good deed. It's over. It didn't work out. No, it's what is the intention? Is the intention deep in the secret part of your soul to please God? If it's there, that's what it means to do your deed in secret. Do your deeds because you love God. And to love God, you actually have to love God. It's got to be genuine. You can't fake that. You're not going to fake God with, oh yeah, I really love you, when you don't. Folks, don't pass go until you have this in place. Do not pass go unless you have this settled. If you don't love God, if that's not right there in the beginning, your deeds mean nothing outside of having this in place. You can work, you can strive, you can do all sorts of stuff. It means nothing if you're disconnected from God. So if you find that that's the case, stop what you're doing. Stop trying. Stop striving. Stop doing everything and refocus on what matters. Focus on loving God. He loves you and he's calling you. He has given his son for you and he is awaiting you just to come and love him in return. It's as simple as that. There's a danger when you don't understand your own situation or yourself. I don't know if we have any Bill Murray fans in here, but he came out with two movies in the 90s. There was one called The Man Who Knew Too Little, and another one was Groundhog Day. And they both kind of come up with similar situations, similar scenarios, right? So in The Man Who Knew Too Little, he's a character that he's going to visit his brother in London, and he thinks he's going to be a part of a role-playing theater dinner thing, right? And so he gets this phone call, and he thinks it's part of the role-playing theater, but it turns out it's a real call to a real hitman, and he thinks it's for him. So he's like, oh, I guess I got to play the role of a hitman. So he starts going, and it's this whole, like, comedic thing. But he's in a real situation where there's really people that are trying to get him. And so one lady's like, what are you, CIA, FBI? And he's like, I'm both. And they're like, whoa, you're both? Right, he's totally messing around. And there's another point, he's up on the side of the building, and there's guys shooting at him, and the bullets are going off. Somehow they're missing him. And one of the bullets hits the wall, and there's dust in his eye. He's like, oh, man, timeout, guys, stop, wait, I got stuff in my... They're really shooting at him, but he thinks, here's the point. When you are in a real life situation, but you think you're acting, it's really dangerous. It's really dangerous, right? Real dangerous. You can be being attacked, and you think it's all a game. You think everything's fine. We're all just pretending. I can call time out whenever I need to. It's not that serious. When you're in a real situation, but you're acting, you're in danger. And then in Groundhog Day, he lives the same day, right? He gets caught in this day. He keeps doing it over and over again. Punxsutawney, right? You guys remember that? And so he learns, hey, I can learn everybody's name. I can learn the piano. He spends all these times doing all this stuff. And he can manipulate everybody to give him what he wants because he knows enough about them, right? But what's the one thing that he can't get? He can't get Andy McDowell's character to love him, right? Because he's acting. He's acting like he cares. He's acting like he really appreciates these people. He's acting like they've been best friends forever. He's acting, and even when he tries to fall in love, he's still acting, and he's not able to really do it. So, point there being, you may be trying to be real, but if you're a fake, you're not going to get anywhere. You can't even fake it. And so, here's why I bring those up. People tend to get their world backwards. We have this tendency to get the world backwards. Most think their inner thoughts, what's going on the inside, their feelings, their emotions, their intentions, their motivations, that's the stage, that's the play. That's what most people think. That's where the pretend happens. That's where our fantasies are. We're just pretending there. And then the social life, the social interaction, that's the real life. That's where real stuff happens. That's what most people think. Jesus is coming on the stage and he's saying, no, you got it backwards. You've got it backwards. Your motivations, your intentions, your spiritual life, that's the real life. That's where stuff is really happening. And then this game that's happening with all these different people, and they're playing this game, and you got to interact in a certain way, that's all temporary, and that's the act. That's where people are really pretending. So here's what he's saying. You're in danger, like Bill Murray in that one where he thought he was just pretending, and people are really shooting at him. you're really getting shot at spiritually. And if you think that's just pretend, that that's just acting, you're in trouble. You're in danger. And then when you think you're being real, I'm in a real situation. I got to get people to love me. I need my daddy's affection. I need this. I need that. I need to climb the social ladder. I need money. I need to have status. If you think that's real, you're in trouble and you're never going to be able to turn it into something real. So don't get them backwards. Pay attention to the way things really are. Beware of the danger that's around you. Our motivations are hard to decipher. It's easy for the religious to get caught in the trap of seeking the approvals of others and deceive themselves that God is pleased as well. Here's what God is pleased with. With faith and righteous deeds done for him. That's what pleases him. Period. Anything disconnected from him may yield great applause from men, but none from God. So invest in what pleases God. He truly loves you for you. He is your creator. He is your father. He loves you. The crowd loves you for the entertainment you bring. God's love is eternal. The affection of the crowd is fleeting. God gave up his son for you. The masses will just as easily sacrifice you for their enjoyment. So make your choice. Whom do you serve? Please join me in prayer. Heavenly Father, we come to you, Lord, and we pray that you would open our eyes to see who we really are, Lord. There is a danger lurking. It is a silent killer. This concept that we can fool ourselves into thinking that we're playing the real game when in fact we're acting. We're being hypocrites, Lord. That can be in totality. That can be on a daily basis. It can be in a certain situation, Lord. I pray that all of us would be genuine, that we would be loving you for you, and that you would be the center of everything that we're doing, Lord. God, I pray that none of us here would be hypocrites. I pray that none of us would be acting. I pray that none of us would be seeking to put man in your place. That is idolatry. That is wickedness. And Lord, I repent for every way that I have done that. Lord, you know my heart. You know how I've gone wrong. You know when I have given what is yours to other people. And Lord, I pray that you would take that away from me. And I thank you that you are merciful and you will do that. I pray for my brothers and sisters here, Lord. I pray that you would remove the temptation to care about and seek the approval of each other. I pray that you would allow them to focus only on you. And Lord, if there is anyone who is being hypocritical, being a hypocrite, Lord, I pray that you would unmask them. I pray that you would convict them of the sin that they are doing. I pray that you would show them the truth and gently and mercifully bring them into your light. Change our hearts, Lord, so that we love you and not other people as the primary. Change us so that we serve you first and foremost. And may you receive the glory for that and the praise, because you are mighty and awesome and merciful and gracious. And we love you. Amen.